I'd like to call the meeting of the HTC Audit Committee to order, and I note the presence of a quorum. First item on the agenda is approval minutes of the members' meeting, which was held on December 2nd, 2020.
I'll move.
Second, okay. Any opposed? There being none opposed, the motion carries. Okay, the agenda items, turn it over to Rich Froelich.
Thanks, Harry. So today, we'll start with the COVID-19 update by Eric and Maya, and then Kathy will present the financial report for fiscal year 2020. Then Lou Roberts is here from ENY, and they will review the audit reports that they have for us. And then we'll seek your approval of the financial statements for 2020. Then Ellen will present the annual investment report for 2020 for your approval. And then we'll also go with her debt report and investment report. Mary Hamm has a report on HTC credit risk and then an internal audit report. And finally, she'll ask for your approval of the audit committee report for 2020. And then finally, we're going to remind you now and at the end that board performance evaluations are due December 29th. So if you haven't had a chance to do that, please do. So thank you. Back to you, Harry.
Okay, thanks. Mine is on its way, Rich, as we speak. The COVID-19 update, Eric and or Rich?
Yeah, I'll jump in and start, and then folks can add to that. So fortunately, well, first let me say I hope everyone's doing well. It has been a really difficult year, but welcome to the new year and welcome to a new federal administration. We feel like the situation is improving on a couple of fronts, largely at the federal level. We're much more confident that there's going to be state and local aid that should be coming. The most recent bill passed does provide some rental support, additional rental support for tenants. But there's still a lot of concern. I mean, you're going to hear some good solid reports on HTC's behalf coming up, but we're still watching this eviction moratorium, and there is a rental cliff. By some analysis, we've estimated there's, you know, been about $2 billion a month in lost rent in New York, and I've seen other indicators supporting that nationally. They talk about 30 some billion dollars, and that's really just the contract rents that are missing. When you look at kind of economic, not just economic vacancy, but actual physical vacancy in some of the market units, those numbers are even higher. So there's some real concerns about that. So we don't want to be overly kind of optimistic in what we're talking about. There's a lot of watchfulness and a lot of concern about that. At the same time, there is reason for hope. The most recent federal bill fixed the 4% tax credit, which we estimate brings another $250 million a year in low-income housing tax credit equity to the city. We've heard everyone is focused on restarting the Federal Financing Bank, FFB, which would be a huge help both in terms of kind of the refinancing work that we could do, but also in terms of economic stimulus. And we've yet to see fully what kind of economic stimulus could be coming. So there's reason to be hopeful on that kind of federal front and on the state level, supported by the federal level for the first time. So we're optimistic about that. And we're also fairly optimistic about what's happening in terms of finally having some federal coordination on the vaccination programs that are being operated at the state level and at the local level. So there's a fair amount to be optimistic on, and still some concerns. I'll turn for a second though. We are kind of advising our folks on a month-to-month basis about return to the office. We've had standing committees working, and we're very coordinated with the city on this. Rather than get too far ahead, we've probably been advising folks on a monthly basis to what's likely to happen. And we're convinced we're probably not going to be in the office before, quite honestly, April. But we're probably going to go out to staff in the next week and tell them, you know, for the month of February, you can expect to be working from home. Although we imagine that's going to be longer. And just the last thing I'll say about that is, even though there's some reason for optimism on that front, there's also some vigilance around these variants. As people know, if you look at the curves on this, and some of us follow these models pretty closely, A lot of them look like the curves are coming down and pretty steadily, and the CDC version looks like the curves are coming down and pretty steadily, but it looks like the variant kind of overtakes the original type sometime in March, potentially, or at least it becomes 30 to 40%, and then some people think it goes from there. So a huge amount depends on how much mask wearing and mitigation we do, social distancing, to make sure that we don't experience another surge in New York around that. So I'll leave it there. I think Rich might have a little more to say about asset management and some other points, but I think that's our update.
Yeah, as Eric said, today's meeting, you'll hear 2020 was a successful year. And that is, I think, great news. And we were definitely concerned and challenged in a lot of ways. But on the financial side, the corporation performed really well. And you'll hear more about that. In addition, it was a major year for debt issuance for us. We were in the top 20 of issuers for the country. And really, if you think about that, it's an impressive amount of work and effort, and that we really kind of kept going with hardly a skip in our beat. So that's something that we're really proud of. But as Eric points out, there are a lot of pressures still in the portfolio. We continue to meet regularly to review requests for forbearance or for other issues. We're also going to be seeing a lot of refinancings as people want to lower their rates because of the challenges that they face. Hopefully, we'll have more tools for them. But that is something that we're also facing, and we're trying to be consistent in how we approach that. But that will obviously impact some of the revenue for the corporation as we need to lower rates. We'll also be really busy. It'll be a very active year, we project, and that there'll be a lot of issuance. At the December meeting, the late November meeting, you approved some issuance that will occur in the near future. So we'll continue to be, you know, super active. But today, as I said, is you'll hear some good news, but we want to make sure that it's tempered with the concerns that we have about the continuing nature and challenges that our borrowers face, and obviously the residents in the buildings that we have financed. So it is a continuing challenge. But the good news is that we continue to perform well, and we are responding to that challenge as best we can. Thanks.
Yeah, very good. The presentation of the corporation's financial report for fiscal year 2020, Kathy. Kathy here somewhere.
I'm coming. Had to get off the mute. Sorry there. So thanks, Harry. So as you've heard, 2020 was a great year, and we're also very happy to see it in the rearview mirror. And although these have been trying times, what seems like an eternity, 2020 wasn't another successful year for the corporation. The ongoing economic downturn caused by the coronavirus pandemic has led to some challenges, as you've heard, but the corporation has adapted and performed very well. And the financials for 2020 have proved positive to that end. Total assets increased to $21.8 billion, an increase of $1.7 billion, or 8.62% from 2019, due to the corporation's robust mortgage lending and bond financing activities throughout the year. HTC's mortgage loan portfolio has performed well as repayments continue to remain close to pre-pandemic levels. Throughout the pandemic, HTC staff has worked closely with mortgagors to monitor their financial positions. As of the end of the fiscal year, 4 mortgages had been granted forbearance and 1 had resumed making their monthly payments. HTC staff continue to monitor the loan portfolio and stand ready to act upon any issues that may arise. Total liabilities were $18.5 billion, an increase of $1.5 billion or 8.9% from 2019 as a result of the corporation's ongoing debt and lending activities. And as Rich had said, despite the pandemic, bond issuances during fiscal year 2020 continued with little interruptions. 21 new bond series were sold, totaling $1.8 billion. In addition, debt obligation draws totaled $17.2 million for the fiscal year, all to create and preserve affordable housing. HTC also signed a new loan participation agreement with the FFB for $65.6 million. Total net position at fiscal year end was $3.4 billion, representing an increase of $286 million, or 9.13% over the prior year. Of this amount, $244.8 million was generated from the corporation's normal operating activities, and $41.3 million were funds received from the 421A grant revenue program with the Battery Park City Authority. During the fiscal year, the corporation early adopted GASB Statement 84, Fiduciary Assets. In the corporation's normal course of business, it is in control of custodial assets, which it holds and expends for the benefit of others. Those activities are now required to be reported in separate fiduciary fund financial statements. The funds affected by GASB 84 are the funds that we hold for HPD relating to several loan participation agreements with the city through HPD, funds that we hold for construction and permanent servicing for HPD, escrow and reserve funds that we hold on behalf of the corporation's mortgagors, and the corporation's OPEB fund. At this time, I would like to thank Mary John and Chuck Yu for their leadership throughout the year and their perseverance during the audit, as well as the entire HCC accounting staff for all of their hard work and dedication in completing another successful audit, all while working remote during the pandemic. Lou Roberts and his team will walk you through the audit results, but if you have any questions, we'd be happy to discuss them with you. That concludes my presentation.
Any questions? If not, then we'll ask Lou Roberts to discuss E&Y's audit report.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. I believe you might all have soft copies of the presentation, but I'm here with Erin Montgomery. She's the senior manager on the audit, and I could see that she just showed the slides on here so you could follow along. First and foremost, I just want to extend my gratitude to the corporation and all of its team members who interacted with my team to get us to this point. We presented the audit plan back in October, first time going through an audit in a virtual environment. We weren't sure exactly how the audit was going to look and feel, but I'm happy that we've all worked together to get us to this point. I know it wasn't easy, so I just want to thank HDC for being flexible and working with us to get us to this point. So if I can flip to the next slide, Erin. The next page is just basically a summary of our services, which we presented during the audit plan presentation. It's consistent with what we presented, so I'm not going to go through that again. The executive summary, just want to highlight a few things. First and foremost, with respect to key business issues, when we met with you for the plan, we were going to assess the impact of the pandemic as it relates to the performance of the loan portfolio, the bond issuances, the refinancings, and the valuation of the investments. And as you heard from Rich and Kathy, it's been a successful year from that perspective. And there were no trends or any transactions that caused us to have to take any deeper dives or question whether or not there were any additional reserves related to the collectability or uncollectability of mortgage balances. So happy to report that that did not present an audit challenge for us. Kathy did mention the adoption of GASB 84, which has to do with the fiduciary activities related to some of the loan servicing as well as the OPEB trust. So that information is presented and reflected in the financial statements. Item number two, our results. There were no matters that we questioned as far as the accounting treatment. The judgments were consistently used by management, and no issues were noted with respect to any estimates. We did not identify any corrected or uncorrected misstatements in the financial statements. As the foundation of the audit, we evaluate the entity level controls and the controls over the various processes, noting that they are designed effectively. And we did also, identify the plan that we were going to evaluate whether or not the controls were impacted by this virtual environment. And based on our walkthroughs with the various process owners, we did not identify any changes with respect to the internal controls. The third item is really just looking forward at some of the upcoming GASB pronouncements that may or may not impact the corporation. I just listed them there. They are described in a little bit further detail within the footnotes to the financial statements. But two right off the top that I know will have somewhat of an impact have to do with leases. It won't be significant, but that is due to be implemented for fiscal year 22. So the good news is there's no new pronouncements that would have to be adopted for next year, going into next year's audit. I'll caveat that by saying, unless the city of New York elects to early adopt any of these pronouncements, thereby requiring the corporation to adopt them early. That's to be seen. And then the other GASB pronouncement that we've had meetings with Kathy and Mary on is with respect to GASB 91 and the conduit debt obligations. That will likely have an impact on the financial statements, but that's not at this point required to be adopted until fiscal year 23. Some of these have been pushed out a year. So the GASB identified that governments are having challenges with just its regular operations. So they issued a GASB, GASB 95, which I did not list here just because it's an announcement that all of the statements from 87 through 96 were pushed out a year. And then 97 came out afterwards, but didn't have an issue. Number four, just want to highlight that we're here today because we work together as a team utilizing the technologies that we have. We had an Ernst & Young client portal where HDC can upload the documents to the secure portal versus having to send us encrypted emails. So I think that created some efficiencies in the audit. And then we also had weekly video conference meetings with Mary and Chuck, where we provided updates, followed up on certain outstanding items, as well as ad hoc meetings throughout the course of the audit. So although we weren't able to sit around a table and meet together, we tried to utilize and maximize the use of technology so that it felt like we were together, even though we were not. The bottom there, just I'll go through the required communications towards the end of this presentation. At this point, we're essentially complete. We made a lot of progress since this was prepared. We're just updating our subsequent event procedures through our opinion date, which is this week. We've completed our executive review of the single audit, and we've provided, and I believe we received, the signed letters of representation from management. On to the next slide, Aaron. These areas of audit emphasis we presented to the audit committee back in October and then had an update meeting in December. There were no changes to that. This just summarizes kind of at a high level of our procedures performed and basically saying that we did not identify any exceptions. So these topics, these areas are consistent with what we had planned. And there was no transactions or issues that required us to change our areas of emphasis. Next two slides. Moving on to the required communications. So I guess I said all of this good stuff with respect to teamwork and all the areas being completed without any exceptions. So therefore, we'll be issuing unmodified opinions, which mean there are clean opinions. There were no changes to our audit strategy, or there were no significant risks that we identified. As it relates to the corporation's ability to continue as a going concern, we did not identify any indicators that would lead us to believe it would not be able to. The corporation's policies and estimates are consistent with generally accepted accounting principles, and they're fully disclosed within the financial statements. Again, the only change in accounting policies was due to GASB 84, which was a required change, and that's fully described within the footnotes as well. There were no unusual transactions with respect to related parties. On to the next slide. No unusual transactions that we identified. There were no material weaknesses that we identified. As part of the audit of the financial statements, we review the management's discussion analysis as well as the required supplementary information We tie out those numbers to the financial statements and the underlying accounting records to make sure that they agree. No issues were noted there. We did not identify any instances of fraud or non-compliance with laws and regulations. We did not identify any independence matters, anything that would put us in a situation where we'd have an independence issue. As I mentioned just not too long ago, as relates to new accounting pronouncements, I don't see any issues that are upcoming. Again, there's nothing that you need to implement for fiscal year 21 at this point, again, unless the city of New York elects to early adopt one of these. There was no disagreements with management, no difficulties encountered. We did not have to identify with any outside consultants, nor am I aware of whether the management had to consult with other accountants. On to the next page, Aaron. That second item regarding third party service providers, there was no reason for us to have to use any third party service providers, but I do want to mention that we do subcontract with the minority business entity of Mitchell and Titus. They assist us in performing the audit procedures. So this is the second year where we've utilized them in performing the single audit and the lender servicer audit. We have historically worked with them on various aspects of the audit, but I've actually had a consistent team for the past 2 years with them, so I'm happy about that. And lastly was the representation letter. That was a standard representation letter with nothing out of the ordinary that we felt that we needed to have included within the management letter. That is the last slide. Again, glad that we're here. We're in a position to issue clean opinions. And again, I just really want to thank the entire team at the corporation for working with us under this virtual and remote environment. And glad that we had some good results.
Thank you. Any questions on the audit report? Okay, there being none, then we'll go on to the approval of the corporation's fiscal year 2020 financial statements. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There being none, the motion carries. Okay. Now, Ellen, the approval of the corporation's annual investment report for fiscal year 2020.
Okay, thank you. The New York City Housing Development Corporation is submitting its annual investment report for the corporation and its subsidiaries pursuant to Section 2925 of the Public Authorities Law of New York State. The report presents the corporation's investment record for fiscal year 2020. As required by the statute, the report includes investment record of the corporation, which is discussed in the letter, the attached letter you have, the investment guidelines, which were previously approved by the members on January 27th, 2020, and the results of the annual independent audit in draft form. The report also includes descriptive charts on the corporation's investments, investment environment, and the counterparty credit risk exposure summary. Major points in the report include the earnings on investments totaled $89.6 million in fiscal year 2020. This was a decrease of $20.5 million from fiscal year 2019, due mainly to a decrease in the reinvestment rates and a decrease in the investment proceeds. The interest rates across short-term maturities and a steepening yield curve are factors to consider in the corporation's ongoing investment strategy. Because the corporation's commitments, the majority of the investments must be held for the short term, which provides sufficient liquidity for the corporation. In response to the current interest rate environment, the corporation continued to invest primarily in collateralized demand deposits, certificates of deposit, and guaranteed investment contracts, and also direct personal U.S. Treasury and agency obligations in order to optimize yield. As required by the GASB Rule 31, the corporation has recorded a fair value adjustment in its investment portfolio. The corporation recorded net depreciation of $2.2 million for the fiscal year. As part of the corporation's investment policies, it looks to invest its bond and corporate-related reserves and securities with the intent to hold the investment to maturity. As a result, any unrealized appreciation or depreciation is only reported as an accounting gain or loss at this time. HEC's funds under management decreased about 22.6% from fiscal year end 2019 to fiscal year end 2020, from $5.9 billion to $4.6 billion. The corporation had a 9.13% growth in net position over the last year. The consolidated investment income was $89.6 million. Of this amount, $50 million, or 55.8% of the consolidated investment income, was attributable to bond programs and HPD-related investments, and therefore not available to the corporation. An additional $3.8 million was earned by and retained within REMIC and HAC. The remaining $35.8 million of earnings is pledged to ongoing affordable housing programs of the corporation. HEC did not incur or pay any fees, commissions, or charges for the investment services. Treasury operations are conducted by the corporation's cash management division, which uses electronic and telephone bidding processes to competitively purchase securities that meet the corporation's investment guidelines and funding needs. Oversight is provided internally by an investment committee and by various by HEC's credit risk and internal audit, audit units. There are also investment and credit risk reports presented at each meeting of the corporation's audit committee and an annual examination by our external auditors, Ernst & Young. The corporation's investment guidelines were last approved by the members on January 27, 2020. Upon approval by the audit committee and ratification by the board, the report will be submitted to the mayor and to both the city and state controllers as required by the public authorities law. I'll be glad to answer any questions about the 2020 investment report or the investment guidelines. Any questions?
Are there any questions for Ellen?
Okay. If there are none, the corporation requests members approve the 2020 annual investment report and readopt the investment guidelines without any changes to them at this time.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There being none, the motion carries. Next item on the agenda is the debt report. Again, you're on, Ellen.
Thank you. Okay, the corporation's debt report is as of December 31st, 2020. The last debt report presented to the audit committee was as of October 31st, 2020. During this time, the corporation issued three series of open resolution bonds totaling $532.9 million and two series of housing impact bonds in the amount of $289 million. There were bond redemptions and two series of open resolution bonds in the amount of $236.3 million and two standalone bond series in the amount of $10 million. The corporation's debt outstanding as of December 31st is approximately $13.5 billion, and the corporation's statutory debt capacity stands at $15.5 billion.
Okay. Okay, the next item is the credit risk exposure, Mary.
I think I have to do the investment report.
Oh, okay.
I have a lot of time on stage, you know.
Oh, maybe I skipped the investment report. Sorry.
No problem. Okay. So the corporation investment report is as of January 12th, 2021. The funds under management totaled approximately $5.26 billion, and this report reflects routine investment activity.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, now the credit risk exposure, Mary.
Thank you. Good afternoon. In your package today is an unaudited report detailing the corporation's counterparty exposure as of December 31st, 2020. The previous report to the audit committee was dated October 31st, 2020. There were no rating agency actions of note, but there were two new approved counterparties, Dime Savings Bank and Hanover Bank. Dime Savings Bank was formed in Brooklyn in 1864 and is currently in the process of merging with Bridgehampton National Bank, a bank already on our approved list. The combined entity will have approximately $11 billion in total assets and will be known as Dime Community Bank. Hanover Bank is a small, privately held, community-focused financial institution based in Neola, Long Island, with approximately $850 million in total assets. Hanover is in the process of merging with Savoy Bank, and when the merger is completed, the combined entity will have approximately $1.6 billion in total assets. Both Dime and Hanover are not rated by Moody's or S&P, but our investments in both banks are fully collateralized by Federal Home Loan Bank letters of credit. HDC's counterparty exposure remains diversified, with the largest exposures continuing to be with Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Investments rated AA or higher were 44% of total investments versus 5% at the last report. And investments rated BBB or not rated were 32% of total investments versus 29% at the last report, and are fully collateralized by high-quality U.S. Treasury or agency securities and or Federal Home Loan Bank letters of credit. HDC exposure to liquidity providers increased to $348.8 million due to the issuance of the 2020 Series I-3 bonds. Any questions?
There being no questions, Mary Hahn can continue with the internal audit report.
Thank you. Since the last report to the audit committee on December 2nd, 2020, the project loan setup and president's office expenses audits were completed, and the Code of Ethics annual employee certification was completed as well. A copy of the project loan setup report and the president's office expenses report is attached in your packet. On project loan setup, our objectives were to determine if there are current and effective project loan setup policies and procedures, to assess efficiency of department processes for setting up and managing project loans, to determine if users have appropriate setup and restrictions to Benedict software in accordance with their job responsibilities, and to determine accuracy of loan data on origination documents, Benedict software, and loan data reports. Upon completion of the audit, we noted no matters involving internal controls that we considered material weaknesses. We found that the project loan setup process was properly assigned and segregated. Opportunities exist to enhance controls for the project loan setup process, and we have communicated with the various departments that participate in the process to determine the feasibility of these enhancement opportunities. Moving to the President's Office Expenses Audit, the objectives were to determine accuracy of the President's Office expenses recorded in Oracle and ensure they are accurately reflected in the general ledger, and to determine whether the expenses classified under the President's Office adhere to the applicable policies and procedures for employee expense reimbursements. Upon completion of this audit, we noted no matters involving internal control and its operation that we consider to be material weaknesses. We found the corporation's guidelines were effective and that the President's Office expenses were generally processed with supporting documentation and correctly recorded according to the policies in the employee handbook. And just as a reminder, this audit is required to be performed each year pursuant to the 2003 MOU with DOI. Finally, a report on the Code of Ethics annual employee certification. Pursuant to the HDC Audit Committee Charter, internal audit is required to provide the audit committee with an annual report attesting that each HDC employee has affirmed or reaffirmed acknowledgement of the corporation's Code of Ethics and Conflicts of Interest policy. I'm pleased to report that this process was completed and internal audit received and reviewed a detailed report from the corporation's Human Resources Department on January 14th, 2021, supporting this affirmation. Are there any questions on any of these audit projects?
There being none, and we move to the approval of the annual HDC Audit Committee report. Again, Mary.
Thank you. I'm pleased to request the members' approval of the 2020 Audit Committee report. Pursuant to the New York City Comptroller's Directive Number 22, the Audit Committee is required to publish an annual report detailing its activities and decisions for the prior calendar year. This report is a compilation of the minutes from the audit committee meetings that occurred during the 2020 calendar year. Upon approval, a copy of this report will be submitted to the secretary for the audit committee of New York City. If there are no questions, the members are requested to approve the 2020 audit committee report.
Do I have a motion to approve the report?
I move.
Second. Any objections? Any opposed? There being none, the motion carries. Any other business? There being none.
What? Just a reminder to, if you haven't filled out the form for your evaluation for your board membership, that would be great. Harry said you're sending yours in.
Yeah, but
just a reminder.
Yeah,
great.
I did it already.
Yay.
All right, I'll send it in.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. If there's no other business, so I'd like to call a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There being none, the motion carries and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.